When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Hey, Drew Scott here.
And I'm Jonathan Scott, reminding you that life's better with a home policy from American Family Insurance. They can help you get just the right protection at just the right price and help you save when you bundle home and auto. Kind of like Goldilocks and the Three Bears. It'll be just right for you. We love a custom build. American Family Insurance. Insure carefully. Dream fearlessly. Get a quote and find an agent at AmFam.com.
Products not available in every state. Visit AmFam.com to learn how discounts may apply to you. American Family Mutual Insurance Company, S.I. and its operating company, 6000 American Parkway, Madison, Wisconsin.
Hey guys, it is Ryan. I'm not sure if you know this about me, but I'm a bit of a fun fanatic when I can. I like to work, but I like fun too. It's a thing. And now the truth is out there. I can tell you about my favorite place to have fun. Chumba Casino. They have hundreds of social casino style games to choose from with new games released each week. You can play for free anytime, anywhere. And each day brings a new chance to collect daily bonuses. So join me in the fun. Sign up now at ChumbaCasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
You all right? If you're a similar age to me, well, we've just covered the rewinds of our youth, of our childhood, and we're going up, creeping up through our adolescence and into our adulthood. Yes, it's our final World Cup rewind here today, because the final is almost upon us on Sunday. We're going to take a look at the three most recent World Cups in this podcast today. We've got the 2010 World Cup in South Africa, 2014 in Brazil, and we're going to Russia for the 2018 World Cup. We've got France, we've got Spain, we've got Germany, and we've got three incredible tournaments. Let's get stuck in. And a quick reminder before we get going here on the final World Cup rewind that we are here every day right up until Monday with coverage of this World Cup and the final, of course. The preview will come tomorrow. The World Cup final will be on Monday, every day, bright and breezy on the Sports Social Podcast Network and on YouTube as well, as well as What If videos on YouTube beyond the World Cup and into the new year. And of course, the World Cup Great Games podcast series has ended on Patreon, but they're all up there for you. Some 28 podcasts, I believe, every single day that we've been covering that on the old Patreon page there. £1 a month, by the way. Anyway, vuvuzelas, jabulanis. Could this World Cup be entertaining in 2010? Well, it'd find a way in and amongst the harsh noise of the vuvuzelas, the penny floater that was the jabulani. But I would say that the quarterfinals were probably amongst the best that we've ever had as a collection of four matches standalone. And whilst some of the football wasn't great in parts, it was by the end anything dramatic. You have to say it fulfilled that criteria, if not the great football criteria. For example, we had the debutante, and it was Slovakia, and my word, did they show up, helping to eliminate Italy. Robert Vitek, the hero, in that 3-2 win. Italy, like France, had underperformed massively. The first time that the two World Cup finalists of the previous tournament had both gone out of the first round. France had their shocking mutiny, their potential player strike. They had an Elka sent home for calling manager Raymond Domenech some unrepeatable words, and he was then forced out to read a player statement. The beginning of the end, of course, for Domenech. He was sacked after losing to South Africa, meanwhile, Marcello Lippi stood down, the hero of 2006, of course, after a defeat to Slovakia and being ranked even lower than New Zealand. The only unbeaten nation, but fortunately with three draws, they were out at the groups. We had Nigeria banned by their government after failing to defeat Greece, and of course with that, Yakubu's incredible miss. There were some great Japan free kicks thrown in there for good measure against the Danish. You had Diego Forlan likewise mastering the Jabulani. On the whole, you would say, whilst wonderful drama, it was a World Cup of slightly lower standard than what we were used to, the likes of Fernando Torres, Wayne Rooney, Lionel Messi, Cristiano Ronaldo, the Mount Rushmore, supposedly, of this World Cup, all of them failing to live up to expectations, and their teams, outside of Torres and his team, they all failed to live up to expectations. And Torres' team, of course, is Spain. They'd finally broken their duck 2 years prior. In 1964, they had waited 44 years for a trophy and did so by winning the European Championships. In 2008, they had waited another 44 years, but wouldn't have to wait another 44 years beyond that. We had the rise of tiki-taka stroke juego de posición, whichever one you want to call it, and the rise of Barcelona and Pep Guardiola's teams. And with the national team, we had Vicente del Bosque, who mirrored that approach. Fernando Torres, as mentioned, was unfortunately largely missing through injury, but in the likes of Busquets and Piqué in from the previous World Cup, and David Villa really standing to attention, they recovered from their slow start losing to Switzerland, getting through via the bodies of Chile, who would join them in the last 16, and Honduras, who would continue their performance of always being eliminated at the groups, as they would do 4 years on in 2014. They would get past a Portuguese side in the last 16, courtesy of David Villa, of course, who Portugal had thrashed North Korea 7-0, but outside of that, couldn't find another goal in their other games against Brazil and Ivory Coast, drawing both of them 0-0. And David Villa scored the winner against Portugal. He scored the winner against Paraguay, which was a crazy quarterfinal. Although it didn't have the goals, it didn't have the incredible drama in the of Uruguay Ghana, or the quality on display of Brazil Netherlands or Argentina Germany. It had a madcap few minutes with penalties, non penalties. There could have been about four penalties in as many minutes. It was a wild game, really. But it was 1-0 from Spain in the quarterfinals. It was 1-0 from Spain in the semifinals. A true tournament performance, as we see more and more of as we creep through this decade. Carlos Puyol to header from a corner, enough to settle the scores between Spain and Germany. Germany, with the semi-final defeat, no longer a disappointment and back to being a tournament force. They have the products of their recent investment in recruitment and scouting. Thomas Muller, Sami Khedira, Toni Kroos, Mesut Ozil, Jerome Boateng, Manuel Neuer were all part of Germany's big plan turn of the millennium. They'd, of course, as we mentioned in yesterday's episode, reaped the rewards of intensive scouting and humiliated England, not only at this World Cup, but in the European Championships under 21 tournament the previous year. And despite losing in the groups in the roadblock that was Serbia, they had won their group and quite comfortably in the end, and humiliated England and Argentina, scoring 8 goals. Fortunately, couldn't get over Spain, but there were certainly promising signs, not only for European Championships to come in 2012, but also the World Cup in Brazil 4 years on. England, they were under Fabio Capello, and it was a brief dash of being alienated by the surroundings in Rustenburg and feeling imprisoned, and a little bit of a dash of disappointing football. Wayne Rooney again unfit coming into the tournament with another broken foot, and it was, of course, goal line technology. But I am of the opinion, I've calmed down in the 12 years since, I think Germany would have beaten us regardless, despite the video that I did put out that may or may not pick up some steam courtesy of this World Cup, but there we are. Argentina, they were under Diego Maradona as manager, and unfortunately without Lionel Messi's great club performances, but essentially suffered the same fate as England, were picked off on the counter quite readily and both fairly out of shape in all fairness. The Netherlands were the final opponents of Spain, and this this was not total football, and Johan Cruyff was very, very unhappy indeed. Mark van Bommel was the tormentor in chief. The Dutch were now spoilers, although they did possess some great players who, to be fair, lit up the tournament first and foremost, Wesley Sneijder. You've also got Arjen Robben in their clash, Jan Huntelaar. They wouldn't face too much of a test in a group which, containing Japan, Denmark and Cameroon, you'd expect them to, but it was plain sailing for the Dutch, 9 points from nine. And they did enough via their two main men, really, in all honesty, Robben and Sneijder, to defeat surprise packages Slovakia in the last 16. Then they were supposed to be swept aside, just as they were in 1994 and 1998, by a very much fancied Brazilian team with Kaká in there as well, the fifth pillar of this World Cup that I failed to mention earlier. They also had Felipe Melo, who was doing his best, Franz Beckenbauer, Lothar Matthäus impersonation in between the lines in midfield and defence. You also had Dani Alves, a world-class right-back, perhaps the best of all time. You had Luis Fabiano up front as well. Felipe Melo's tournament, unfortunately, came to a head against the Dutch, lashing out to get a red card and a potential own goal, which I'd probably give more charitably to Wesley Sneijder there. And that was Brazil's tournament kaput. The likes of Robinho would also be in the squad. They wouldn't be back for the following tournament. Only Dani Alves, out of the names mentioned, would be back for their hosting of the World Cup some 4 years on. Netherlands, they had to punish Uruguay for their mishaps in the quarterfinal. Of course, Uruguay, they got through South Korea through a superb performance, courtesy of Luis Suarez. They had got through the quarterfinals through Luis Suarez, but by far more nefarious means, of course. His handball against Ghana, which stopped the ball going into the net and making it 2-1 in the quarterfinals on the 120th minute. Asamoah Gyan had dragged Ghana through to that point as well. They had scored penalties galore in the group stages to get Ghana through to this point. And it was Asamoah Gyan as well who was the hero in the last 16 against the United States after extra time. Here, he unfortunately hit the bar with the very last kick of the game to take the game into penalties. And through Sebastian Abreu's cheeky little panenka, they would be defeated and Uruguay would be in the semi-finals for the first time since 1970, but were quickly disposed of. Giovanni van Bronckhorst thunder bastarded in a first goal, and again Wesley Sneijder and Arjen Robben were the stars of the show for the Dutch, scoring in quick succession to put the game firmly beyond Lasse Alesteyr there. The final, as we mentioned yesterday, as we touched upon briefly, wasn't a pretty one. Not one to be proud of. It wasn't total football. It wasn't tiki-taka. Things to be proud of in Spanish and Dutch football. It was violence, underlined quite clearly by Nigel de Jong's kick on Xabi Alonso. It broke records for the amount of cards shown in a final, only to be defeated in terms of World Cups galore on the Battle of Nuremberg with Portugal and the Dutch and in 2006. The Netherlands, they had chances primarily from Arjen Robben, just as Rob Rensenbrink did in 1978. But the final would go the way of 1978. The Dutch were beaten after extra time and the Spanish were probably deserving winners of the tournament. And Andres Iniesta provided a beautiful ending, scoring the winning goal in extra time, paying a tribute to his late friend as well. And Spain were well on their way to dominating world football. They had emulated the likes of Brazil earlier on in the century by winning two tournaments in a row. Likewise, France and likewise West Germany in the 1970s. They would win the European Championships in 2012 too, completely blowing all those teams out of the water by winning three tournaments in a row. But then it was time for the World Cup in Brazil, and we will get to that after this short break. 2014, football had come back to Brazil for the second time. It came back, unfortunately, under a cloud, as FIFA were perpetually under this cloud by this point. There were controversy over drinking laws in Brazil, the location of some stadiums, most notably Manaus in the Amazon, and the time it took to build quite a lot of the stadia as well. They were debutants in the form of Bosnia and Herzegovina, who I foolishly tipped to qualify from the group stage, and joining Bosnia on the first flight back were Italy, who started well against England, but like so many, fell foul to Costa Rica. Then they lost to Uruguay with a chunk of Giorgio Chiellini's shoulder taken out for good measure. Of course, England were also joining them on the first plane home as well, losing first against Italy, then against Uruguay. Disastrous, despite Wayne Rooney scoring his one and only World Cup goal. Roy Hodgson's transition to youth not particularly working there. Portugal were another big name out who had a disastrous start to the tournament. Pepe sent off, quite rightly as well, and Thomas Muller's hat-trick seeing to them for Germany there in a 4-0 victory. And just about salvaged their place in the World Cup with a late draw against America, but ultimately it wasn't enough. And the fourth huge name was Spain, who rivaled Portugal for the worst start, losing 5-1 to Louis van Gaal's Dutch team. And of course we had the great stories of Costa Rica's incredible topping of the group of death, beating two former World Cup winners and going undefeated against a third, of course, England. It's the great story of Algeria earning the chance for 1982 revenge with the Germans by beating South Korea to finally make the knockout stage, as they should have done all those years ago. And it's Giorgio Samaras' last-minute penalty to send Greece and not Ivory Coast into the last 16. This was a World Cup far different to 2010. This was a World Cup that had absolutely everything. Despite four huge names on the first flight home there, we still had a knockout phase chock full of talent, a South American dominated World Cup. And of course, we only had to go to Brazil to kickstart the tournament. They had a much improved squad. Their poster boy was Neymar, of course. They also had Coutinho, Marcelo, Oscar, Hulk, Thiago Silva, David Luiz, and the maligned Fred. Not the Manchester United midfielder Fred, but the striker Fred. They coasted through a fairly simple group, in fairness, against Croatia on opening night against Mexico, despite the heroics from Guillermo Ochoa, who put in quite possibly one of the greatest World Cup goalkeeping performances, and against Cameroon there. I thought they were incredibly fortunate to beat Chile in the last 16. Chile, who'd undergone a change from Marcelo Bielsa to Jorge Sampaoli, but retained quite a lot of the philosophy there. They had helped beat and eliminate Spain after the Dutch had slain them 5-1. Chile, quite comfortably in the end, beat them and eliminated them with a 2-0 win. Chile were arguably better in the last 16 against Brazil too, but unfortunately, the cruelest of penalty misses, a penalty miss off the inside of the post, had Brazil through, had Chile out. And it was an all-South American quarter which saw Brazil play a Colombia team who were performing at their best World Cup yet, and James Rodriguez would win the Golden Boot. Most promising group team out of the entire tournament, it could probably be said, alongside maybe Argentina, maybe France. They won all three games, and James Rodriguez would wrap up his Golden Boot in this game, and the round prior scored a Puskas Award-winning volley against Uruguay as well. Unfortunately, it was a bolt from the blue, or rather yellow, and the Seleção's David Luiz free kick, and that put pay to Colombia's unfortunate quarterfinal. And again, like Chile, probably could feel hard done by. They were playing some fantastic football. It would be the beginning of the end for the Brazilians, unfortunately. Thiago Silva was suspended for numerous yellow cards throughout the tournament, and Neymar would go down with a horrific back injury. So Brazil versus Germany in the semi-finals, Brazil were missing some huge names, and Germany were just about getting going. Their first win against Portugal had given them enough steam to get into the last 16, but it was far from convincing, really, despite a 4-0 win over Portugal. I tend to think of it more as Portuguese self-destruction than a very good German performance. Germany, there was expectations around them now. The youngsters from 2010 had matured, and unfortunately, they were expected to go and win Euro 2012, perhaps one of the favourites, as the likes of German football, the Dortmund, Bayern Munich, they were starting to threaten the Spanish monopoly with Pep Guardiola soon to leave Barcelona for Bayern Munich, of course, with a year out in between. And by 2014, he was just coming over the Bundesliga title with Bayern Munich after his first season there. German optimism, though, was in the toilet after a draw with Ghana after a real failure to put some goals beyond America as well in the final group game. And it only picked up, really, with a virtuoso sweeper-keeper performance by Manuel Neuer against Algeria. And although 2-1 over Algeria after extra time doesn't really... shouldn't really get the blood pumping, so to speak. It was lifting the mood for the German fans. Had confidence up in the camp as well, and that followed a functional 1-0 win against a France team who were probably in the same stages that Germany were in 2010. Quite an embryonic team, and like Germany in 2010, France got undone by a set-piece goal and a 1-0 win, a tournament win, and they were undergoing their own revolution with Didier Deschamps. And of course, Germany's World Cup would be most remembered for a semi-final, the Minnesau, and 7-1, the most famous of the World Cup semi-finals, it has to be said. It's part Brazilian self-destruction, most parts Brazilian self-destruction, if we're honest. 5 goals conceded in the first half an hour. Sunday League defending would be harsh on Sunday League players, and it was quite clear that whilst Neymar, yes, he was missing, it was rather Thiago Silva that his absence was more keenly felt, as Brazil, they showed a bit of fire going forward, but ultimately the main reason why they lost that game, as they did, they would have lost it with Thiago Silva and Neymar, I'm of that opinion. But the lack of organisation in the back line and was clear to see right from the very first goal when it was 0-0 and Thomas Muller scored one of the simplest goals from a corner as you're ever likely to see. The second goal was Miroslav Klose breaking the World Cup record, taking it from a Brazilian in Brazil against Brazil. And from then on in, Brazilian heads went. 3 goals, Sami Khedira and Toni Kroos were just almost didn't want to score. It was that embarrassing. They were playing, overplaying, and still had an open goal for each of the next few goals. And by halftime, Brazil were out of the World Cup. Germany were no longer pushing for more goals. It didn't serve them to do that, especially against the hosts who were. Were the favourites going into this tournament by a lot of people. André Schürrle, though, didn't get that memo. He scored 2 goals. The last one was quite emphatic, the 7th. And Oscar then scores the most ridiculous consolation goal. And Brazil, if it wasn't supposed to be their tournament, their 6th World Cup, then on South American soil, it was supposed to be Lionel Messi's in Argentina. Lionel Messi, he was the best player in the world on form by reputation. They had a functional team as well. Di Maria, Sergio Aguero, Gonzalo Higuain, Javier Mascherano, who literally put his anus on the line to put Argentina into the World Cup final. And Lionel Messi, unlike the Argentina team in 2010, he would be able to lift them through the most difficult moments. He got winners against Bosnia and Iran fairly late on. He scored twice against Nigeria, earned all of Argentina's points in the group phase. And they teamed that in the knockout phase, at least by being resolute defensively. Yes, they did need an extra time winner against Switzerland in the last 16, but so did Germany against Argentina and against Algeria, rather. And Gonzalo Higuain's winner was fairly similar to how Germany scraped through in the quarterfinals as well. Functional performance by the Argentines. A winner against Belgium, who were looking like dark horses, but had quite a simple route to the quarterfinal. It's a terrific game of football in the last 16 against America, and what was, as one of the seeded teams, a fairly simple group for Belgium with likes of Algeria, South Korea and Russia. Of course, Argentina would go through against the Dutch on penalties. The Dutch performing in their second shootout in a row, they couldn't pull the same trick as they had done in the quarterfinals against Costa Rica, where Jesper Sillinson was pulled from the contest before the penalty shootout. Tim Krul was in and he saved a couple of penalties. Costa Rica were beaten in the quarterfinals, their greatest performance yet in a World Cup, even beating the performance from 1990. Meanwhile, Cillessen couldn't perform heroics like Krull, and Argentina were through to the final. Yes, Louis van Gaal's Netherlands came out of the blocks like a freight train, but unfortunately tapered off and were by the last 16, by the quarterfinals as well against Mexico and Costa Rica, which does rival Germany's run to the 2002 World Cup finals being up there with one of the easiest. By that point, they were incredibly fortunate. First with Arjen Robben taking a tumble against the Mexicans to score a late penalty there to win the game. And then obviously against Costa Rica on penalties in the quarterfinal. Germany, on the face of the entire tournament, were probably maybe deserving winners. It was a toss of the coin between them and Argentina, really. Both probably had a good shout of being named the rightful World Cup winners. Again, a poor final because finals tended to be this way. The stakes were incredibly high and it was another extra time goal, the only goal of the final like it was in 2010. This time, Mario Götze, and that came after obviously Gonzalo Higuain fought, he'd won the World Cup with that offside goal despite everybody knowing he was offside. But that is by the by. So Germany went into the 2018 World Cup, hopefully not wanting to suffer the same fate as Italy in 2010, as Spain in 2014, and of course before that, with the brief break for Brazil of 2006, or France in 2002. Yes, the World Cup curse. Was it alive and well as we go into Russia? Well, we'll find out after this short break. Welcome back. It's 2018 and the hosts were Russia, and probably more so on British shores. This was a controversial choice to host the World Cup, even more so now across the board, really. But the World Cup went off without a hitch. We had debutants in Iceland who had obviously stunned the world in the European Championships of 2016, but didn't do well enough in a tough group which also contained Argentina, Croatia and Nigeria. We also had Panama as debutants and they got slapped quite comfortably in a group containing Tunisia, England and Belgium. It was the tournament of incredible group stage drama, the miracle of Kazan with Germany's continuation of the World Cup curse. It was the drama of Spain versus Portugal in the final day of Group B, where neither Spain or Portugal could seemingly get over the line against relative minnows Iran and Morocco. It was the World Cup of Senegal being eliminated at the group stage on yellow cards. It was a tournament which only had one 0-0 draw, which served both France and Denmark well for playing for it as both went through. It was the return to prominence of England, the continued promise of Belgium and the continued underperformance of Brazil, Spain and Portugal. It was the absence of America, the Netherlands and Italy, the unsuccessful returns of Egypt, Peru and Poland. And out of the group phase, we have probably the most impressive team being Croatia, the perpetual dark horses. In this team, we have a one-of-a-kind midfield, Luka Modric, Ivan Rakitic, and of course, in defence, the impenetrable partnership of Domagoj Vida and Dejan Lovren, with Ante Rebic, Ivan Perisic and Mandzukic making up quite a formidable front three as well. They really put their marker down in the group phase with a humiliation of Argentina 3-0. And that really showed how far Croatia had come from. One of their very first World Cup matches was a loss in a group phase to Argentina. Here, they were thrashing Argentina 3-0. And after a 2-0 win over Nigeria, they were already qualified. And they were one of three teams to earn a 100% record in the group phase. And not only were they thrashing teams, they were also grinding out wins. And they really did show their stamina going into the final stages of this tournament. The tiring shootouts against the Danish, against the Russians. Russia, who had stunned Spain, who looked like they were finally on course to do something despite Fernando Hierro having to be parachuted in to the tournament because of Julian Lopetegui's taking of the Real Madrid job, and obviously the Spanish FA not taking too kindly to that and sacking him on the eve of the tournament. Regardless, they had enough good players and enough talent about that, enough philosophy about that they could get far in what was a half of the draw that had only seen England and Spain win the World Cup prior, and it was England, and they're not going to do anything. But it was a buoyant England in the semi-final. Roy Hodgson was gone, and in between, Sam Allardyce was gone after one game, the most successful England manager by win rate, of course. But it was Gareth Southgate, a reluctant manager at first, but then had finally got England going by reverting to a back three that had helped England at 1990, that had helped England in parts at Euro 96 as well. They were the two bright spots in a quite beige grey time for England since 1966. Here, whilst they would be found out in the semi-finals as being tactically naive in the 3-5-2 and not having anywhere to go outside of that, England brought good times back. The group stages, of course, it was a fairly simple 1-2 with Belgium and obviously the jump down to Tunisia and Panama, but the belief was still there. Putting six beyond Panama, Harry Kane was on for the golden boot, which he secured well in advance in the last 16 against Colombia. It was not only the beating of teams that you'd expect England to beat if you are an optimist, Colombia, Sweden, Panama, Tunisia. It was the method of doing so, the tactical ingenuity of playing three at the back, the late win against Tunisia, remaining calm, and the, of course, the banishing of penalty heartbreak that had seen England lose time and time against Germany again, against Argentina, against Portugal again, and against Italy in 2012. Finally, they had won a World Cup penalty shootout against Colombia, and then rather serenely.
It is Ryan here, and I have a question for you. What do you do when you win? Like, are you a fist pumper, a woohooer, a hand clapper, a high fiver? I kind of like the high five, but if you want to hone in on those winning moves, check out Chumba Casino. At chumbacasino.com, choose from hundreds of social casino style games for your chance to redeem serious cash prizes. There are new game releases weekly, plus free daily bonuses. So don't wait. Start having the most fun ever at chumbacasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions 18 plus.
Felt kind of odd that England would beat Sweden in the quarterfinal and do so really quite comfortably and serenely and calm and all the tranquil, all them adjectives, all the semantics to do with calmness there. But unfortunately, they weren't experienced enough, weren't tactically astute enough to get over a extra time period against Croatia, which they had famously led through Kieran Trippier. Just a couple of minutes in, would those lessons be learned in 2021? Some say no, some say maybe a little bit. Anyway, Perisic, Mandzukic and Croatia were in their very first final. Joining them as the winner of an incredibly tough half of the draw were France. Now, their coronation from the 2014 World Cup, where we mentioned, of course, that they were a young team losing to a functional and eventual champions, Germany, in 2014. They were supposed to be coronated just as Germany was supposed to be coronated at Euro 2012, but wouldn't. France exactly suffered the same fate, although not as much. They were, or even more so, they were taken to the final. Portugal were the team that had won one game in 90 minutes across the entire tournament and famously defeated France on French soil in the Stade de France as well. So France were following an eerily similar trajectory. They had bolstered their own scouting and coaching of youth players. They had an incredible roster to choose from and were suffering a defeat when they were expected to win and got quite close when they didn't expect to win. And now it was the time to follow up what Germany had done, follow in their footsteps. And they did exactly what they had done. It was quite a slow start, the likes of Peru, Denmark, Australia falling with 7 points, just as Germany had done in 2014. Did it without much fanfare, but in swapping Olivier Giroud out for Ousmane Dembele, they now had a player almost in the mould of Stefan Grivac, but it was more purposeful this time. It was a false nine, and it was France benefiting from those buzzing around him, like your Antoine Griezmann, your Paul Pogba, and N'Golo Kante as well. And, of course, Kylian Mbappe, who really, if you had been living under a rock and you didn't know who Kylian Mbappe was, then you certainly did against Argentina, scoring two, winning a penalty in a 4-3 win. And obviously the only goal he wasn't involved in, Benjamin Pavard's incredible, incredible faded volley, which for me is the goal of the tournament. I don't know about you, but there we are. And again, like Germany in 2014, functional in the quarterfinals. A set-piece goal to beat Uruguay, and of course a goalkeeping error to be chucked in there for good measure. And those tournament wins kept going fairly unremarkably. It wasn't a roller coaster. It was fairly level footing here against Belgium, who by 2018, everybody was expecting them to do well, to win the World Cup. Finally, they were the golden generation, the perpetual golden generation. We'd all heard stories like that before, though, by this point. We'd seen Portugal buckle under that weight in the early 2000s, England do likewise in the mid-2000s, and here, Belgium, they'd done incredibly well. Yes, the group was comfortable. The last 16, they ought to have beaten Japan far more comfortably than what they did, but in beating Japan, going 2-0 down in the second half of the last 16, to then win it with quite possibly one of the great counter-attacking goals of World Cup history in the last minute, it showed a bit of character. And then it was the turn to really for the likes of Romelu Lukaku, Kevin De Bruyne, an incredible defence, Eden Hazard, Thibaut Courtois to finally graduate, to become one of the elite by beating Brazil. And in the quarterfinals, it was a tiny bit like how England beat Sweden. It was almost too comfortable. You're suspicious, really, that you're in a dream from a Belgian perspective. And Brazil, they were just going down the same route as they had done time and time again after the World Cup win of 2002. It was quarterfinals. And again, just like in 2006 against France, just like in 2010 against the Dutch, they fell in the quarterfinals. Obviously, the outlier there is when they hosted the tournament. But I would argue that they probably deserve to go out before the semi-final against Germany. That's my hot take on that one. Anyway, Brazil hadn't really performed to expectations. They'd drawn against Switzerland. They were incredibly fortunate against Costa Rica to score too late on. And Neymar wasn't really at his peak in his pomp. He was more famed for his incredible role on the touchline. I think it was against Switzerland, perhaps. But regardless, Brazil were, obviously, they're going to be named favourites just because of the name brand value alone. It was just going to be that way, but they were far from it at this tournament here. In terms of the final, it was France versus Croatia, and you'd have to say that despite the 4-2 scoreline, which France got fairly lucky in the first half with the own goal from Mandzukic and the VAR decision, which, by the letter of the law, yes, it was a handball, but common sense says it probably wasn't. But there we have France leading 2-1 by halftime by not really doing much. And in the second half, a little flurry with Mbappe scoring, the first teenager since Pelé, of course, to score in a World Cup final, and then Pogba scoring as well. A little brief flurry there and a couple of fortunate goals. That was enough to score 4 goals in a World Cup final, despite, let's be honest, the remainder of the match, Croatia being the better team. And it was Ivan Perisic scoring a wonderful equaliser. It was Mario Mandzukic latching onto comical goalkeeping by Hugo Lloris. But in the end, it was Hugo Lloris lifting the World Cup trophy aloft. And here we see perhaps a lesson for the World Cup final. I don't know, I'm recording these before the tournament, so we may have two teams who have absolutely obliterated the field, or we may have two teams who have been incredibly functional. But here we had Croatia, who played the best football in the tournament, versus France, who played the best tournament football in the tournament, by which I mean conserving their energy, picking up wins via any means possible, not really blowing anybody away by their, you know, superb football. This wasn't a Brazil 1970. None of these World Cup wins in the 2010s were this blowing away of the entire field. Even Spain, who are rightly regarded as one of the greatest international teams ever assembled alongside Brazil of 1970, even them, they 1-0'd their way to the World Cup in 2010. So far, their only World Cup. And that is the World Cup story, all wrapped up, the most recent World Cups as well, in there for good measure. We'll have a preview of the final tomorrow. We'll cover, well, we'll do a World Cup rewind, I suppose, of the entire tournament so far and see who will win the 22nd edition of the World Cup in Qatar. And of course, on Monday, we will be reviewing the final, and that will be our a final podcast of the year. We'll probably deliver a couple of teasers from the old Patreon page over the Christmas period and New Year before returning in the second week of January every week here on the Sports Social Podcast Network. But until then, thank you very much for joining us throughout this World Cup. If you're on Patreon, you will have hopefully enjoyed the Great Games podcast and here on over there on YouTube as well. And here on YouTube, for anybody just watching over there on YouTube, this podcast, I hope you've enjoyed all the What If videos. It's been an incredible slog this month, and hopefully some entertainment has been had. But thank you very much for listening, for supporting the channel any way you do, from watching, listening, and even donating your hard-earned money to the channel. It's, thank you very much. I'm incredibly grateful. Until next time, Sithee. Up the Three Lions. Might not even be in it.
Podcast Network.
It is Ryan here, and I have a question for you. What do you do when you win? Like, are you a fist pumper, a woohooer, a hand clapper, a high fiver? I kind of like the high five, but if you want to hone in on those winning moves, check out Chumba Casino. At ChumbaCasino.com, choose from hundreds of social casino style games for your chance to redeem serious cash prizes. There are new game releases weekly, plus free daily bonuses. So don't wait. Start having the most fun ever at ChumbaCasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18+.